the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, Nooner, where the schedule is irregular because we have real life appointments to adhere to. My name is Joey. Here, as always, my co-host, Len. Buddy, how are you? Great shirt, by the way. What's going on over there?
Yeah, the Kaboom Racks shirt. Thank you to Kaboom Racks for supplying each of us with one of these shirts. Everything is great over here, Joey. These last couple of days have been kind of foggy. I'm not sure if the same has been over there. So it's kind of been surreal when you look outside the window and go driving. But yeah, everything's great. How about you?
It's good. It has been foggy over here. I'm convinced that my dog and probably other dogs too think their owner controls the weather. I don't know why they wouldn't think that. It seems only natural that the dog would think that you control it since you control everything else. And so I always feel like when it's raining, foggy, cold, my dog looks at me like I've done something wrong, like I've wronged him in some way and I need to remedy the situation. But I'll work on that with him this morning. I'm off work today. This morning, I spent a few hours doing some maintenance on my car and my wife's car, driving them around to different vendors and whatnot. So yeah, good way to spend a morning. All I'll say, Len, is that slow leaks in your tires will give you a boatload of grief, especially if it's in the rim sealant department. So got to get that done too, probably the next week or so. Anyway, we got an interesting show today. We were going to do this last night, but we couldn't link up. We couldn't link up Wednesday. And now it's actually lucky we did it today because yesterday in the House of Commons, there was a committee meeting between the Standing Committee on Industry and Technology, INDU, I-N-D-U, and a number of, I hate to say it, but what they're calling basically blockchain notables. So we had some folks from BeatDApp Software. We had someone from the Canadian Blockchain Consortium. We had someone from Mavnet Systems, someone from NDAX, National Digital Asset Exchange. And of course, friend of the show, John Amuni from ShakePay. So this is about a 2 hour long committee meeting that's available on ParlView, like Parliament View, and it's VU instead of VIEU that you can watch. It's not listed on the committee's website yet, but it's worth your time, I think, to watch it. So initial thoughts, Len. I was honestly kind of disappointed in a lot of the content. I suspect you probably were too. I just want to start with maybe getting your 30,000-foot view on the bits of it that you watched. What did you think?
I think that the people, the industry experts that came on there, for the most part, they were not talking about Bitcoin except for John. He seems to be the only one that was staying on message and talking about Bitcoin as not being blockchain, and Bitcoin has been up since 2014 and it's, you know, something that's revolutionary. And he was along those lines. And also with, I mean, I'm just going to go into the weeds here. He also did mention the fact that they are backed one-to-one with their assets on their exchange, in the ShakePay exchange. And the reason why he did that, I think it's to try to alleviate any concerns anybody may have, especially given what has transpired in the last few days, in the past few months, in fact, and a lot of customers have lost whatever they had on exchanges. So ShakePay doesn't seem to have that same type of volatility. And that's another thing that's being talked about, is the volatility that is being experienced in this space. And I know that regulators, they're looking forward to really hammering down on what could be done moving forward to protect their citizens' funds moving forward. But it's really all reactionary stuff. But the whole blockchain technology and the fact that they're going to potentially be using this as a reporting tool and everything along those lines, it makes me wonder, do the people over there, are just shilling their garbage? It's truly centralized stuff. Like, for example, that BeatDApp Software. I took a look into that, and that is something for where they find missing royalties and identifying streaming fraud. I mean, great. I mean, this is it's a good thing. I guess it's going to solve some problems, but the underlying problem still is there that needs to be solved. The money is broken. The monetary system is messed up. And the financial policy goes along with all that. It's creating some problems for everybody. So finding financial royalties within streaming services, fine, and that's wonderful. But the problem still exists. We have to fix the problem. That's where Bitcoin comes in.
Yeah, there was a part of that, a part of that committee meeting. It's near the end, so I know you were busy this morning too. I don't know if you've made it to this part yet, where one of the committee members is talking about the recent, you know, the recent reminders that have been issued by certain members of parliament about Pierre Poilievre saying you can opt out of inflation with Bitcoin, and how the price has gone from, you know, 70,000 US to about 20,000, 15,000, whatever US, and how this would have been a mistake. And people need to be reminded that these things are dangerous. And the guy asks each of the sitting witnesses, so each of the contributors, how do you view the level of risk in the ecosystem for investors? And they all, you know, there's like a sort of a second of silence where I didn't watch that part of the video, but I heard it. And I'm imagining that, you know, they're looking at each other kind of laughing. And the guy goes, okay, what about if we take out Bitcoin, everything but Bitcoin? How would you frame the level of risk that investors are taking by putting their money in these things? Every single one of them said hi, including the ones who are there selling their own bags, including the guy Endax, who runs an exchange that sells a bunch of other stuff, I'm pretty sure. And so, you know, the committee, I think, tries their best based on their political stripes to villainize Poilievre and do so vis-a-vis Bitcoin, but they kind of cheapen their opinions through the other things they say during the committee hearing. There's a moment where one of the committee members is talking to the guy from BeatDap about whether or not this idea of royalties and finding frauds and royalty payments and finding the, you know, ways to give licensing royalties to as many people as possible, as accurately and as quickly as possible via blockchain, compares the stuff BeatDap is doing to ETFs. And the BeatDap guy is like, ETFs, I'm not familiar with that acronym. And the guy spits out another acronym after that, and still not it. And then I'm guessing he looks over to his aide and is like, what is the acronym? And the aide is like, NFTs. Oh, NFTs. Are you telling me that a committee member on industry and technology can't differentiate between ETFs and NFTs? And this guy wants to make recommendations on what I should and shouldn't be allowed to invest in based on risk? That's a real bogus proposition, in my view. And to your point earlier about whether or not these guys are all there kind of pushing their centralized services, I would take a step further, Len. I think these guys are there shilling their bags. Like, these guys are talking about tokens and ecosystems that they're invested in, that they for sure have VC investment in, probably some cross investment between a few of the people on that committee, the experts, and maybe people on the committee as well, to be honest with you. I really view that as like an exercise in futility by all parties. I will give some kudos to Jean for trying to capture the essence of the Bitcoin, you know, ethos as best he could in parlance that makes sense for that committee appearance and for the people who are listening at that committee. But I think even still, like, there's work to be done. And I'll pass back to you after this. I've said this in the past. There's work to be done by Bitcoiners about how to effectively politicize our mission here. And it shows. There's people there who are like, what was the name of that woman who was speaking? Her name was Kolea Carrington. She's the executive director of the Canadian Blockchain Consortium, a volunteer position she holds, by the way. There's a question near the end about, you know, the nature of the impact of blockchain adoption on women. That's a bullshit question. But if you think about all the stuff that goes into that question, someone at the blockchain consortium probably greased the wheels to get that question asked. They probably gave Kayla a number of things to say that would, you know, make a decent soundbite. And together, now you have a little bit of cooperation between government and the blockchain consortium on a topic that it just simply does not matter. Okay, it does not matter. I'm not saying that women's causes don't matter, but the idea that there's some kind of unique infrastructure or individual challenge to women's rights or women's causes thanks to blockchain adoption, like, this is just, it's flat out wrong. It doesn't make any sense. You know what else, Len? The stuff about like barcoding, item numbering every single product in the space that a lot of these guys and committee members were talking about, this is not pragmatic. There's no way that we're going to be doing this for every single thing in the grocery store, every single piece of clothing you wear, every single checkpoint on the supply chain and things like this. Like, it doesn't make sense. The one company selling basically quicker store recalls during contaminations, like, it's like we've seen this before, okay? We've seen these promises before. The promises of ultra fast blockchains, they're not decentralized. Ultra new ideas that are going to, you know, turn on their heads the ancient ways of our ancestors, the ancient ways of today, and modernize things in a way that's going to be so beneficial for everyone. We've seen this before. This is all the IPO stuff. It's all the stuff from 2019. It's the A16Z investment portfolio, just wearing a suit and tie in front of Canadian members of parliament. I was really disappointed in the people that were brought in, save for Jean. And I thought the questions were bad too. That was a concerning session to me, because if you look at their past, like the history of their meetings, I was on this today. How did I find this thing? Anyway, these guys have been doing a number of different things on, for example, COVID response. You know, like, how effective was the COVID response? Well, it seems to me that they found it to be effective. It continued for quite some time. And I haven't heard anyone denouncing the COVID response. So, like, I worry that these committees have some sway and are being used to influence public opinion. And I can't imagine a world where I would let any of these people tell me what to invest in. None of them seem particularly competent on the subject.
It's going to provide a report to the House of Commons. And from that, they could decide how they want to pivot, if they want to take any action based on any recommendations that are written in that report. But also, I want to note that Bill C-249, and that was an act respecting the encouragement of growth of crypto asset sector. This is Michelle Rempel Gardner's private members bill. That was it turned out to be a failure. It didn't pass the vote this past week. So as you can see, the House of Commons, the people in there, they have their mindset. Not to say that this bill is something that should have been passed, but they didn't even give it a chance to look at it and to make some recommendations later on. So clearly they're still living in the fiat environment. They didn't want to expand their horizons, and that's fine. That's just the way that they operate, and that's the way they function. That's no problem at all. But I do have to give respect to the people that showed up to this committee, and they all showed up at least wearing suits and ties or something along those lines, rather than having somebody like SBF show up in shorts and a t-shirt. So, you know, maybe this is a step up from those type of meetings, but not too far moving forward. But the blockchain stuff, the fact that they keep talking about it, and Canada wants to be somehow positioning itself on the forefront where it's going to be a global leader in this technology, give me a break. The whole blockchain stuff, and you touched upon it, you hit the nail on the head there. It's not going to be solving so many fucking problems that exist. In fact, these problems don't exist. So you just try to create problems and, oh, look, we have this that could solve it. Pay me money and we could solve the problem that we just created. And I think a lot of this either is running on some like shitty blockchain like Bitcoin SV, which has the capability, or at least claims the capability, of running so many transactions per second.
The one guy during the thing was like, we have a blockchain that will run like more than a billion transactions a second. What are you talking about?
When I heard that, it made me click in that I think that's a Bitcoin SV type thing, because that they keep talking about it on that front, that their blockchain is so robust and it could process so many transactions per second. And that's just more of a BSV thing. But another thing I wonder is, how much is this, the people there, and you talked about it, that maybe they have the people on the committee themselves, they might have bags too that they want to have pumped. Well, how many of this is tied to Ethereum? It's hard for me to say, but there's always that question in my mind is, how much do governments like to use and pump Ethereum? Because you could censor transactions, and because it's centralized, you know which body of people you could talk to and try to grease palms or twist their arms to make things see it your way. And you can't have this same type of result with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is, obviously, we talk about all the time, it's decentralized. And if you want to try greasing palms, whose palm are you going to grease?
I'll take some grease. Your palm's open for some grease.
they sure are. But you could twist mine as well at the same time. And unfortunately, I won't be able to change anything moving forward. except the narrative that comes out of my mouth. And that has absolutely no bearing with what's going to happen with Bitcoin. So I just wanted to double back to that. I wonder how much of this is just the Ethereum crowd coming in and the government is being cozy up to them. And they're just trying to push this because there's an agenda here that Ethereum is the thing that they want to see succeed. And nothing else is really something they want to have move forward. It's just, I just don't know. Maybe it's the conspiracy theory in me, but yeah, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this.
We only have till about 12:30. So let's talk about this Ethereum thing. And then I want to talk about CBDCs and the way they were misconstrued during that hearing. The Ethereum thing looms large. Okay. It looms large for a number of reasons. And part of them, you know, part of that hearing, albeit brief, did discuss that there's a need for a taxonomy of these digital assets. What is a security? What is a currency? What is a commodity? What is, you know, X, Y, or Z? I continue to think that we don't have this because there are people who in decision-making seats who hold bags of these things who are trying to influence the outcomes or at least delay them until, you know, the price rebounds and they can sell. You know, that's also a possibility. I don't think we're going to get a lot of this legislation in the bear market. You can call me a tinfoil hat guy for thinking that, but I believe that's going to be the case. The Ethereum thing looms large also because, you know, in Canada, we have these sort of small committee settings fairly frequently. This is the Indu's, I think, 49th meeting or something like that, 50th meeting. Who knows how many they've done in the, you know, in their lifetime. But in America, at the same time, and not to like beat a dead horse here, I think we've drawn all the blood from the FTX stone that we possibly can here. But I look at what's going on with SBF, who's clearly a guy who supports Ethereum and doesn't support Bitcoin, you know, has made as much known in public appearances and public speech. There's no legal action coming against this guy. You know, I don't know what's going on there. My guess is that the reason there's no legal action is because there's support from the government for this message and what FTX was doing, and SBF was supporting them in different ways as well through the media and through you know, PAC donations, things of this nature. There's a kind of perverse synergy here that looks to be taking shape. You can kind of see the landscape coming into focus. Who supports who, who's in bed with who else, and what tokens they want to see succeed. There's a lot of, you know, reasonable ways to draw these lines, to attach these threads from pin to pin on your, you know, on your pegboard, on your wall, without looking conspiratorial. So I think you're right. I think there's something to be said about all those things, and there's some stuff yet to be uncovered, let's say. I don't want to go too deep into the conspiracies. The other thing I wanted to mention is this CBDC commentary during the committee. Very brief, like I said, but one of the committee members asked a panelist how they felt about the way Estonia had managed, I think he framed it as managing confidence in government to administer a CBDC, and how we can do something similar here in Canada, or should we do something similar here in Canada, and how can we help bridge that trust gap after something like FTX or Quadriga or whatever. And one of the panelists equated a CBDC to a digital dollar on the blockchain. This is not a digital dollar on the blockchain. I don't know why. You know, I assume that he said that because he's trying to, you know, for brevity's sake, maybe not go into the weeds about the differences between a CBDC and a blockchain dollar. But this is like, that's dangerous territory, because now you're part of a soundbite. Now the committee can say that, oh, people like the CBDC, they're embracing the CBDC, without mentioning that you also mistook it for a blockchain token. I don't think that there's any room for these errors anymore. This is something that, you know, someone in the chat pointed out here, these things should have been remedied when Andreas Antonopoulos spoke to Canadian Parliament in like 2013 or whatever year that was, like a long, long time ago. They haven't been remedied. We're still dealing with the same issues, the same nomenclature mistakes, the same framing debacles between, you know, how do we, like I said this on Mike Campbell's show too, how do we regain trust? Bitcoin doesn't need trust. The companies that are sitting there who need VC money and retail money need trust, but Bitcoin doesn't need trust. You know, these other blockchains that run on two nodes, you know, like one guy says, we get 10 billion transactions a second, they only need two validators. You need trust for that. Bitcoin has all the trust it needs built into the protocol, and all the security it needs built into the protocol as well. What I was surprised that I didn't hear more about was energy consumption. And I don't know if it's because it's a difficult topic to get into and some of the panelists knew so much more than the committee members, but whenever it was brought up, I felt like it was shot down pretty quickly by the witnesses that, you know, Bitcoin uses mostly renewables by modern definitions. The power, you know, the grid response potential of Bitcoin miners is incredible. You're selling power to these miners who can go anywhere in the world and bring jobs to remote communities. They build out tech infrastructure to make their operation functional and the communities benefit from that. That's one thing I was happy to see. I'm wondering though, like the skeptic in me wonders why it wasn't more of a bullseye for the committee members, because it seems to be the only thing people care about these days, power consumption in Bitcoin and the price going down after fraud. Those are the two things that like many of our American friends had to deal with yesterday over turkey and stuffing, I would guess. And so I just wondered, do you have a view on why that wasn't a key issue during the committee hearing? It didn't seem to me like anyone cared to talk about that very much.
They didn't talk a lot about Bitcoin. It was more just about blockchain stuff. And as a result, it wasn't, at least in my mind, it just doesn't seem like that's it was going to be topic A that they wanted to address. It's more just like what is going to be solved and how will our lives be advanced by using blockchain. It's not just what the type of energy or how much energy is being used by Bitcoin itself is the real issue here. So I don't think that they even cared about that. So it's more just the technology side of things. It's not about the scarcity of or just using energy and the fact that there's a finite amount of energy out there that we should divert it to other causes. And I just wanted to double back. You were talking about the CBDC thing. I could be wrong in this. It could be just my ignorance. I thought it was built on a sort of a blockchain technology where there is a ledger there that it just continually build on it. I mean, I could be wrong. I know that they use proof of authority as a way to continually add to it. So at least to me, like just based on that information, it sounds like there is a blockchain, although it may not be public. There is an underlying blockchain that is part of the whole system that's under the hood, but I mean,
I haven't seen that anywhere. If I look at CBDCs. Okay, we'll back up a little bit here. The reason Bitcoin catches flack for being on the blockchain and trying to, you know, parlay itself into currency position is because the velocity of the money is too slow. If no one wants to spend, and when they do want to spend, they can't get transactions out. They got to pay for transactions, all that stuff. Those are blockchain problems. Some would argue that they don't matter that much. I don't know. I think me and you don't really care. There's Lightning Network, all these other layer two solutions. But for the average Joe, the average Jane, they care about that. When it comes to CBDCs, I have a hard time understanding why they'd use a blockchain for it. Why not just use digital dollars, digital wallets, the same way that they, you know, airdrop other things to you these days? Like if they want to airdrop, for example, your vaccine passport, they just give it to you as a barcode. You add it to your phone. That's it. I don't think there's a need for a blockchain CBDC. The blockchain only makes sense because you don't want to unwind transactions. It's security risk to not use, you know, blockchain for that. And you want there to be some assurance that settlement, settlement finality comes along with a bit of a cost, I think, as well. That's another, you know, feature for something like Bitcoin. So I don't think a CBDC would use that. I haven't, you know, to be honest with you, Len, I haven't looked that deeply yet, whether or not there's governments claiming they're going to try and use a blockchain. I know they will say that with the rise of blockchain technology, the appetite for a CBDC has increased. I don't necessarily think those things are linked. Those are narratives, not necessarily realities on the tech side. Do you agree with that, or am I missing something there?
To a degree. I mean, I'll go back again. When I hear the term proof of authority, that sounds like to me that there is a underlying process to continually build on a block and to add transactions to the block and then add that to the blockchain. So that's why I'm just thinking that there is a blockchain and there's going to be, I mean, I could be ignorant in this particular position here, but the fact that you have a ledger and that ledger would be the blockchain, that would then dictate who has what. And that would be the underlying proof of the fact that funds exist and the funds exist in your hands or somebody else's hands. So that's what I always perceive that. But I think that's more just a talking point for this show. And it's nothing we can really solve with moving forward. But again, I could go back. CBDC, I think that we're not really ready for retail CBDC just yet. It's going to be some time before we even consider crossing that bridge. But It may potentially happen. And if it happens, what is going to be the implications for that? Is if you do believe that having control over information is something that's very powerful, and we've seen this in the past, having control over somebody's money is even more powerful. And just to go, I mean, I'm going to go back to even Bitcoin here. And how risky is it to hold Bitcoin? Well, there is, as long as it's KYC free and you understand exactly, if you have the 12 or 24 keys to get access to it, there's zero risk. The price of the Bitcoin could move up or down, whatever. But as long as you have access to the actual Bitcoin, you have the keys to the private keys to get it, there's nobody that could be taken away from you. Unless it's a $5 wrench attack, when I guess now it's going to be $15 with inflation. But there's no way that could be taken away from you. The same cannot be said about anything else. Your gold could be confiscated from you. Your car could be confiscated from your house, your money in your bank account, but not Bitcoin. That is secure as long as it's KYC free, because nobody will then know how much you have. But yeah, as long as you have access to the private keys, you're golden. And there's zero risk to that. The price, sure, is volatility to that. But having ownership of the asset, zero risk, in my opinion.
When I hear things like we want to protect consumers and come up with like a CDIC equivalent for crypto assets, like Bitcoin or others, whatever, all I hear is we want access to the funds on your exchange. And I think that they'll say that, well, we want this so that we can protect in case that you become a bad actor, or in case that you are compromised in some way, or they'll spin it as foreign powers may be interfering. But I think that at some point there's going to be a request, and maybe it won't even be, you know, like a thinly veiled request. It'll just come as a bomb over the top rope. Like, hey, in order to ensure that you're protecting consumers in the way that we legislated or want to legislate, we're asking you for, a third party or whatever to have access to your funds, a trusted third party through the government, to make sure that you're not doing anything with those funds that's against the rules. I know you say you're not. I know you have proof of reserves. I know KPMG signed, you know, X, Y, and Z documents, but it's not enough. There's never been a better time to consider how privately you're holding your Bitcoin. We've had MVK on talking about the cold card. You and I have used a multitude of wallets over the years. If you go back to the first episodes before we really had a format down, we used to talk about like one Bitcoin related thing every week. And I think one of the first weeks we did was hardware wallets, right? Mm-hmm. And so we were talking about hardware wallets and like the pros and cons. Yeah, I don't know where mine is. I think it might be upstairs. Anyway, so we were talking about hardware wallets and stuff like that. And we have tested out many of them, including the cold card recently. And you know, there's an importance now to holding your own Bitcoin, not just because there's risk of fraudulent activity. That always existed. But you're going to start seeing more hands and eyes going into exchanges under the guise of protecting consumers. If that's something you're okay with, fine. You know, stick around, do your thing. But as more transparency becomes the requirement for regulated exchanges, these exchanges that buy and transfer to cold storage automatically are going to become more valuable. We've talked about a few of them on the show before. I'm not going to name them again. You can ask us privately if you want to know some of this stuff. But there's a lot of options for this now that I think, you know, where there may be a price premium, maybe it's worth it. Where there may be another sign up required on your end, maybe it's worth it. Maybe you don't know how to use coin joins. Maybe it's worth learning. Maybe you don't know how to use wallets like Sparrow and Samurai that have different coin control options. Maybe it's worth learning. There's a reason that tenured Bitcoiners care about this stuff a lot more than people who are new to the space. It's worth investigating those reasons and seeing if the little bit of extra hassle and learning that it'll take on your part is worth it for your stack. I would suggest to you that though the price is $15,000 right now, you owe it to yourself to protect your Bitcoin like the price is $1 million. And so I think a lot of people are doing that. I hope that you're doing it too.
Yeah. And the fact that it was trading, whatever it is trading right now, I'm looking at 16,480 according to the block clock behind me. That is just the price that was last traded. The price in your head may be much, much higher, and it may be to a point where you may not ever part with it. Like, I don't know what it is. So I'm looking at the price. The price to me is meaningless because I know I bought a heck of a lot more at a much higher price, and I bought some at a much lower price as well. And that doesn't really deter me whatsoever. It's because I understand the value behind it and the fact that it's scarce. And it makes me so bullish the more I think about it. But then, yeah, you know, I go a little bit further into that thought, and it's like, how much are governments going to put up resistance to this? And that's something that I wonder that this is something that maybe there's going to be some real resistance and some real headaches for Bitcoiners moving forward. But that, Joey, will be a topic for, I guess, another time, because I think we've exhausted our time for today's episode.
We have. My poor Nona is waiting to have coffee and lunch with me. She's going to give me a hard time about something, I'm sure, which she is so keen to do, but I'm happy to take it anyway. So yeah, thanks everyone for listening. Sorry about the weird schedule. I appreciate you guys coming in the middle of the day on a Friday. Are we doing a space today? Are we planning? Green Candle's not doing one. Are we doing one?
We'll talk. I guess we'll maybe.
We'll think about it. I don't know. I got physio today and some other. We have another meeting at 4 today.
Yeah. So we'll figure this out. We don't want to. Okay. We'll figure this out. So if you see us on Twitter, feel free to join up. If not, we won't be there. And have a wonderful weekend. Then we'll see you on Monday.
Take care, everybody.
Take care.
Funny business on the air there.